Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
If you're a fan of Top Chef, you know last season was all about Wisconsin. But one guest chef may have caught your eye for her balance of creativity and tradition.
Elena is the founder of Wildberries, a nonprofit that promotes traditional farming techniques, and was named one of 2022's most influential Native American leaders of Wisconsin.
Wow. Hello, everyone. I wanted to greet you in my language, the Ho-Chunk language, and say welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before she was a Top Chef mentor, Elena Terry worked in the restaurant industry for more than a decade before switching to the role of full-time community builder. A member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Terry founded Wildberries in 2017 to bring struggling members of her tribe back into community. The organization provides mentorship and vocational skills and expertise in seed-to-table cooking. Terry was profiled in this month's Milwaukee Magazine, and she joins Lake Effect's Sam Woods for a conversation about Wildberries, the merits of traditional and experimental cooking, and what she'll be reflecting on during Thanksgiving.
Elena, I want to start with your relationship to food as a child. Can you tell me a story of food playing a role in your early life?
Sure. I mean, I have a very young food memory of being like a toddler and seeing my great-grandmother, who she was the one that they brought turtles to and wild game to clean. But most specifically, I remember a turtle because for us, they're like incredible figures in our stories, creation. They're like these ultimate warriors. They live on land and in the water, like these beautiful, very sacred beings they would take to my great-grandma to care for and to clean when we had ceremony. And she talked to them and prayed with them and explained what she was going to do so that their spirit knew why they were there. It was not a moment of fear or like being timid around what she was doing as she cared for these animals, but it was more like this deep sense of this is where I belong, like being outside at the fireplace with not just my great-grandmother, but my grandma and her sisters, and feeling like the warmth of the fire or smelling the smoke and hearing them speak Ho-Chunk. Like that for me, still to this day, is a very peaceful and comforting memory. And it is all centered around our traditional food.
How do you continue to honor that memory today?
I would say by being able to bring my children and my grandchildren around that same space and give them the experience as best that I can in this day and age with the same amount of nurturing and education that went with it. It was so much more than a process. It was an understanding. It was a spiritual connection. It was a lesson on land stewardship and in caring for our animals. Like all of this was intertwined in that one act, you know, of really preparing a very sacred food for us. So when we're doing those actions or taking care of those very sacred foods in those spaces, I try to be as mindful as I can in instruction and in the space even, and having like good feelings and approaching it with prayer. It's the way we're supposed to live our lives. And it's continuing that teaching in those spaces.
So in addition to being a world-renowned chef, you also run an organization called Wildberries. Can you tell me a little bit about what Wildberries is and what it does?
Sure. So Wildberries was founded as a response to a call to action from our tribe. And around 2017, I mean, and still to this day, unfortunately, we've been suffering great loss from things like alcoholism, drug abuse, or addiction issues, even mental health issues in our community. And our tribe had these meetings and they said, you know, what can you do? What can you do as tribal members to promote community involvement, to get people to show up? And I was like, well, I can contribute in this very specific space. I can create a space in the kitchen. And we started by working with the tribal judge. I think they had a a little conference for drug court and wellness, and they asked us if we could cater. And so I called people from the drug court who are participants to come in and cook with us. It just ended up being this beautiful movement of, if this is a very specific space that I can create and have for people who are trying to come back to their community, who are trying to overcome these incredibly difficult issues to overcome, maybe by sharing a meal or by sharing a kitchen space, they can know that they're still welcome. You know, like, our lives aren't meant to be perfect. And so why are we so judgmental when people stumble in our community to the point that they don't feel welcome back? So here's a way that we can build a bridge. Like, we can say, anybody in any situation, I don't know, for people who've worked in a restaurant, know that in a kitchen, if you're willing to show up and work hard, you can be successful in that space. So not only are we creating a bridge for them to come back to our community, but we're helping build life skills and vocational skills in the process. So it, for me, Wild Berries was a place where I could heal as well, where I could go and be a part of my community in a stronger and more grounded way, where I could still contribute, but do my job, which is a chef, which I love being, but I could also be a part of my tribe in a way where I felt I could contribute.
What stood out to me as you're describing Wild Berries' origin story is that, you know, there was this community-wide call to action. You know, we have this issue, we have people who feel like they're on the outs, how can we bring them in? And your contribution to that is saying, like, well, I have some skills, you know, I'm going to stand on that. I have some skills and I can use those skills to help bring folks in. Am I hearing that correctly? Was that how this all got started? It was just like, hey, I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I can do it, we can do it, right? Like, if I can do it, then I can help you. We can do it together. And it's this sense of, like, how did we forget what a tribe was? How did we forget what the very meaning of being a tribe is? And in celebrating individuality and saying that we're stronger together, like, it's bringing those core values back when we have to exist in, you know, a capitalistic society. We're all part of this greater community, but that doesn't mean we're not part of our tribe. We're the great Ho-Chunk Nation. So how do we treat each other like that and recognize that, like, you are beautiful with all your imperfections, and if anything, stand alongside me because I'm here for you. Like, I see you, you know, like, you have value to me.
Yeah. I want to move to a conversation about food as both tradition and experimentation. So, as you know, food is a flexible medium. On the one hand, you know, say you're preparing a squash soup in a traditional manner that connects you to cultural history, and the taste you get from that dish is a shared experience between you and generations before you who have prepared it in the same way and all that. But on the other hand, fusion food is incredible. I mean, you put some kimchi and some sweet chili sauce and, I don't know, some roasted garlic on a hot dog, and I'll be talking about it for months. I'm actually describing a hot dog I made this summer, so I have been thinking about this for months. But I'm curious how you balance these two truths. How do you know when it is appropriate to honor tradition in a dish and when it is appropriate to experiment and see what you can do?
I mean, there are times with my community when I'm cooking and I want it to be all ancestral. Like, I have seeds and corn that saved up just meant for our tribal communities because that's all we have enough for. You know, we don't have enough to feed our greater community some of these very exclusive foods that are still coming back to us. So there are times when I'm like, this is going to be all decolonized, all very traditional. We're starting with a prayer in the morning. And then there are times when, you know, I was for a great part of my children's life, a single mother. And I want to cook foods that I'm going to get them to appreciate. Like, I want to use blue corn in a way that it's palatable to them without restriction. Like, if I want to make that in a cookie, I'm going to. Or if I'm going to, you know, have venison a different way and use potatoes, I don't like living in a box with restrictions, especially when it comes to food. Like, there are definitely times when I feel like the decolonized menu has to be the way to go, and I'm capable of doing that on a very high level. But I also think there's times when we really need to honor that, you know, food is food. And how are we going to choose to feed ourselves in this moment? Is it going to be by celebrating that I can make a cookie out of this ingredient, or I don't have to? You know, like, I don't like limiting myself by certain parameters and just saying that not only is the food appreciated, but it's the process. And however I want to develop those flavors or develop your experience, enhance it, I'm going to do that without restriction, you know? So I really like to say, like, am I capable? Absolutely. Can I do it in any given moment, cook completely decolonized? That's like no beef, no chicken, no eggs, no dairy, all of these, wheat flour, you know? Or am I going to not limit myself with those parameters because I don't have to? Nobody said I absolutely have to. And am I going to give you an experience that you won't forget?
So say a dish is placed in front of you. Do you find yourself wondering what that dish's story is, or the story of the chef behind that dish?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are times when you can tell that, you know, a chef is doing something because they believe that it's going to turn out good and it tastes good, and it very technically is. But there's also these times when you have a bite and you're like, wow, like they brought me somewhere. Like I understand a much deeper sense of who the chef is based on this one bite. Like there can be very technically executed perfection in dishes where I'm like, it was okay. And there's other dishes that it's like, wow, I understand a little bit more. And they've brought me into their world. And I think that with a meal or a bite as a chef, that's the ultimate compliment, right? Is that's what you want. You want to engage your diner in an experience, not just a bite. And you want them to understand things a little bit more deeply, like to embed sensical memories from smell to sight to the taste. That's what the experience should be. And you can have a really good experience with a very well technically executed meal, but it's nothing compared to one where a chef is really engaging with you and bringing you on a journey.
Is there a dish you've had recently where it has just taken you on a journey like that? Mm-hmm. And I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry.
You know, there has been one bite, which I just had at the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival by Chef Claudette Zepeda. And it was amazing. And we were tasked to focus on local ingredients and the local purveyors and then make a dish based on what they kind of gave us a list. And she made this like tortilla crusted deep fried eggplant bite with smoked fish. And it looked very simple on a plate, like a scoop of fish on top of a little, you know, eggplant bite. But when you took a bite, it was like, oh, wow, there's smoky charred tortilla crisp and creamy eggplant. And like, not only is the smoke of the fish hitting you, but on the back end, you get the chili, which like is 100% Claudette. And I was like, wow, she really nailed this. And like everything I could have expected from her was in this one bite. You know, like that is what you hope to achieve as a chef.
Yeah. I noticed how you said the phrase, that's 100% Claudette. It stuck out to me there. If there's certain things where you taste it, if like, yes, this tastes like you made it.
Yeah. And I mean, just, it was like a version of the everlasting gobstopper, right? Where you were like, oh, this is the front end. And then it transforms as you're chewing it. And then on the end, you're left with like, I need to go get another one of these. I need to experience that again. Like that is what you hope to achieve when you're creating these experiences, because it is more than a bite. It is like, I want you to understand a little bit more about who I am based on this bite, or bring you to my space. Because for me, that's what it's about. It's sharing the story of who we are.
Speaking of the story of who we are, we have a holiday at the end of this month that food is very much a part of it. And in your interview with Milwaukee Magazine, you were asked about Thanksgiving. And I'll paraphrase to say that you said that you're not anti-Thanksgiving, but you think it should be a day of acknowledgement, either via the food you're eating or via conversation. Can you speak more about that?
Sure. I mean, I'm never going to say don't get together with your family and celebrate thanks of whatever it is. So how the Holiday has kind of transformed along the years. It has become its own thing. And although its origins are from a very traumatic moment in history, I feel like we can really take the opportunity of saying, like, yes, this holiday is here, but why is it here? And how can we speak about it differently or engage differently and not have it always be this hyper-commercialized day? You know, like, it's like, okay, we're going to end this and we're going to go shopping and we're going to do all of these things. Like, let's pause for a minute and say, like, where I live in Wisconsin, here rurally, it's hunting season. There's long days, right? Like, you look forward to those meals and the time that your family comes to share with you. So, like, have a moment to appreciate the conversation or to get something that's locally sourced and have a conversation about that. Like, our food systems are going to be incredibly transformed over the next few years. Like, that's a proven fact right now. So how can we take this opportunity to have a conversation about it, to talk about local sourcing or about true history of our spaces? I'm not saying that you have to get into a highly in-depth, politically charged conversation, but, like, let's acknowledge that everywhere people live on native land. And so who are the people that occupied that land before you? And how can we maybe start making forward steps into reclaiming what this beautiful space once was?
Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but I want to end not with a question, but for you, an invitation for you to have the final word.
Sure. I think the beauty of my job in this moment is emerging from the pandemic. Chefs had a different type of clout and credibility. You know, we almost had to become experts in these fields of sourcing, of advocacy, of, you know, the business part of it all. I think in the end, it is all based on a passion, on this beauty of feeding people. And how are we going to choose to continue to feed people in a greater environment that is constantly going to be changing on us? And I will say that for me as a chef, the beauty has been in the solidarity amongst, you know, the others doing this work. I've been able to meet some incredibly inspiring chefs and have transformative conversation with them who are doing similar but incredibly different work than I am doing. But we all have the same goal of a better tomorrow. So you don't have to be a chef for that to be your goal, right? You can do whatever you'd like in life for that to be your goal. So, like, how can we stand better and stronger together with the end result being a brighter and better tomorrow? You know, I would like to see that happen, even whatever small ripples of change we put into place now.
Well, Elena, thank you so much for spending some time with me and for joining me on Like Effect. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Elena Terry is the executive chef and founder of Wild Berries. She spoke with Lake Effect Sam Woods.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.